p.m. to 10 p.m. at Theater 294, located at 294 Route 109 in Farmingdale. Again, that's this Friday, January 5th from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Theater 294, located at 294 Route 109 in Farmingdale. Come meet fellow WBAI listeners and give any size donation that you want to support our favorite Peace and Justice radio station. If you want to host a WBAI giving party yourself, email ama@wbai.org. Again, that's ama@wbai.org. See you this Friday.
Greetings, this is Savion Glover, and you're listening to WBAI in New York. Enjoy.
Good morning. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer at York College, City University of New York, saying Happy New Year. That's right, the first day of 2018. It is also Imani, seventh day of Kwanzaa. That is the principle of faith, the faith that we as people of African descent, black people, can be victorious as we believe in ourselves, our leaders, our teachers, and, again, the righteousness of our struggle. So, again, happy New Year and best wishes for a prosperous, productive, and resistance and transformative New Year, because that's what it's going to take, given the circumstances we find ourselves in. And, by the way, there's no better way to begin the New Year on this first day of Kwanzaa by becoming a WBAI buddy. You know, I mean, one of the ways that we're going to continue the struggle, Aduta Continua, is through maintaining WBAI on these airways. So why not start today if you're not already a WBAI buddy? I am, and proud to be so, by simply going to give to WBAI.org, and for as little as $10 a month, by your credit card or savings account, you can sign up to be a sustaining contributor. That means that it just comes out every month. It's painless. I don't even feel it. It just happens. It's done. And that way I don't have to worry about, did I remember? Did I forget? No, it's just done. It's done. And that's the way we want you to do it. So become a WBAI buddy. Make that your New Year's resolution and act on it. Don't default on that resolution. Well, today we're going to focus on two great days. This is Haitian Independence Day. This is the day in 1804 that Jean-Jacques Dessalines declared Haiti the first black republic in the world and from Gonaïves. It is also today in 1863 that the emancipation Abraham Lincoln signed, or it took effect, the Emancipation Proclamation. What a coincidence that the Haitian Revolution, the struggle of our Haitian brothers and sisters, and the struggle of Africans in America had key turning points on January 1st. And both are incredibly important, and we will talk about both of them during the course of our show today. Now, many of you know I have this great passion for Haiti. And that passion is not just sentimental. It has to do with the history that we're going to be talking about and where Haiti is now And so joining us for that momentarily will be Judge Lionel Jean-Baptiste coming out of Chicago, or actually outside of Chicago. And later on, Mark Thompson, who is with Sirius XM Progress 127. In fact, I just finished 4 days guest hosting for him last week. So I said it's time for him to come over and return the favor and be a guest here on Vantage Point. And he'll be talking about Emancipation Day. And we'll be talking about how important is it to commemorate these days, both in terms of their history, their background, and what they have meant to black people in general. Joining us now for the conversation is Judge Lionel Jean-Baptiste, who has been patiently waiting for us and eager to get involved in the conversation. Lionel Jean-Baptiste, welcome again to Vantage Point.
Well, thank you very much, Professor. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the entire staff of WBAI that's been serving the progressive community over such a long period of time. I'm happy to be part of this conversation. Thank you for your work. You know, the marathon runners are essential to bringing us, you know, the cumulative kind of impact that we need over the long run. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Really appreciate that. Well, I really wanted to, and, you know, I'm hoping that we in New York will be able to resume this for many, many years. I know 5, 6, 7, 8 years or so. The Institute of the Black World 21st Century always had a Haiti Independence Month celebration and commemoration or program at the House of the Lord Church, where Reverend Herbert Daughtry is the senior pastor. And it was just something we did every year. And it really, and it was not just African-Americans, Haitian-Americans, everybody coming together, really powerful, powerful programs. Mm-hmm. But we've not been able to do that recently because of the stuff that we're doing around the country, around the world. It's just got to be too much. But we want to resume that. But one of the questions I wanted to ask you just from the beginning, Lionel, is Haitian Independence Day, what happens on this day? Do people celebrate it? Do they commemorate it?
Yeah, Haitian Independence Day is commemorated wherever Haitians are at. First thing that we do is, you know, everybody consume squash soup on this day.
Right.
It's Independence Day soup. This is the soup that the slavers used to consume on Independence Day to celebrate the first day of the year. And so after liberating ourselves, we decided to hold on to that tradition for ourselves, because the enslaved Africans were not able to partake in this ceremony and this, you know, consumption of this delicacy. So that's what we do, and families do that automatically. And we also do different gatherings.
Right.
The various organizations pull people together, try to share the history with friends, allies, the younger generation, and we celebrate. This, for the last, let me see, since 2010, post-2010, the celebrations, many of them have been combined with a commemoration of the lives that were lost on January 12, 2010, as a result of the earthquake. So it's a combination of things that are done, but it is celebrated throughout.
Yeah, I know that. I kind of know that. I've been had the privilege really of going to some of the, having been taken by friends here in New York to various programs, and I raised that for a reason, just in terms of the conversation as it unfolds. So I wanted to establish that first, that this is something that Haitians remember. They have traditions, their food that's eaten, and people, the churches and various programs that go on, and you can count on it. Anywhere Haitians are, that's happening today. Now I'd like to just get into kind of 101, because I got more questions than we probably can answer, but we've got a pretty good stretch of time. And in terms of the Haitian Revolution, of course, I have argued that it is the greatest revolution ever when measured against the criteria of human rights. And but I think it's important for our listening audience to situate this revolution just in terms of some of the background. You know, this island colony, variously called Hispaniola or Saint-Domingue. How important was this island colony to the sort of European commercial interest prior to the revolution?
Well, it's been said over and over again that Haiti was the richest, Hispaniola was the richest colony in the Western Hemisphere, and richest over the combined output of the colonies in North America and Latin America in various places. So it was producing tremendous amount of wealth. And it was the object of, you know, competition between the Spanish and nation and French and England, all vying to try to control this particular colony. It's been said that in France, almost 25% of the population made its living off of something related to products from Haiti, sugar, cotton, and various other products that were being produced. So it was essential. And as a result of that, it's the tremor that was sent through the system, what I call the slavocracy that existed around that time, when Haiti, the Africans on Hispaniola decided to revolt and organize a protracted war. This was a tremendous shock and unthinkable in the context of, you know, the white supremacy,
right,
that Africans would dare rise up or had the capacity to do that. So it sent a shockwave both on the economic level in terms of undermining the whole system that existed, but also, and not only for France, but throughout the entire slave system, because you had nations like the United States that took a position to try to quarantine the revolt, the struggle, the war for independence, and declared it, characterized it as some kind of virus run amok. Because it was just unthinkable that the Africans would rise up and you know, try to overthrow a system that existed over centuries and that had provided the basic wealth of the Western world.
Right. Now, you characterize it as a protracted struggle, because what I want to do is sort of walk people through how this unfolded. Some of which I know, some of which I don't know, but I know, as you said, it was it's like a series of revolts, right, sort of leading up to this. And so would you talk to us about this idea of a protracted struggle that, you know, 1804 is this culminating point, but it took a long period of time of resistance, you know, to including, you know, one of the areas I know a little bit about is Bwakaima with Boukman, and I always like to uplift Boukman because he seems to get lost when people sort of look at the, you know, of Toussaint and Dessalines and Pétion and Christophe. But I always like to uplift him as well because people kind of forget about him. But, and I'm sure there are others that are just not mentioned in that same way. So talk to us about this protracted struggle that led to 1804.
Well, as we all know, those of us who have studied the whole slave system and the relationship of the enslaved Africans to the slave masters, you know, the legends of the Western society would tell us that, you know, folks were peacefully coexisting within that system. But there were constant resistance. Folks ran away in the language that we know in the United States, the runaway slaves, you know, the Harriet Tubman and others, but also in the islands in Latin America, the equivalent of the runaway slaves were called the Maroons. So the Maroons, and in Creole and French is Mawon. So today you have the symbol of the Neg Mawon, the Maroon holding that conch, blowing through it, still with chains on his ankles, and holding a machete in his hand, to symbolize both the outcry, the reach to organize, the machete, the fight back, and the chain, you know, coming out of slavery. So people resisted. You had earlier kind of figures who rose up in the ranks, such as Macandal, who was an early rebel revolutionary who basically led Maroon attacks against enslavers. But the significant gathering that many talk about as a Congress almost is the gathering that was called together by Bookman Kutsi. Bookman was an enslaved African who came from Jamaica. And in the because of the rotation, the intensity of the production in coming out of Hispaniola made it such that people basically lived, life expectancy was about 30, 35 years old. So there was a lot of rotation and replenishment of Africans. And Bookman was said to have come from the African continent. He was not born in the in enslavement. And he came out of Jamaica. He was a priest of the Vodou religion. And Bookman had organized various leaders from who were resisting and brought them together at Bois Caïman. Bois Caïman has been interpreted as a couple of things. One, the woods, it was in the thick of the forest where they say, you know, alligators were existed, so that they made sure that their gathering was in a place that was remote and inaccessible by the enslavers. And also, there's another interpretation to Bois Caïman. In Creole, Bois, it could be Bo, is near Kai, the home of the imam. There's also a characterization of Bookman as also being of the faith of Islam combined with the Vodou. And so it was said that Bois Caïman was also near the home of the imam, Bookman. So Bookman called his followers together, his fellow freedom fighters, and they declared that, you know, they needed to shift the paradigm. And Bookman issued forth a major prayer in the thick of a ceremony where the drums were rolling. It was in storming. Those who came together understood that they needed to make a sacrifice of an animal to the gods. So they killed a pig and they shared the blood. And while the drums were rolling and machetes in hands, Bookman prayed and told the followers that they needed to reject the symbols of the god that perpetuated their oppression. reject that image and call on your God, who has been watching over us from the heavens, who really want us to avenge our situation and transform our reality and fight back. So this was the call. This was the cry at that time. And so much of the history of that moment indicates that Toussaint was there and a number of other people were there. And they came out of that mobilization with the call of freedom or death. And the cry of freedom or death resonated and was carried out by those who left that area and began to fight back to attack the slave masters. And Bookman was eventually captured, and his head was cut off and exposed to the rest of the population by the slave masters to try to indicate that they had won a victory. The fight continued. That is, when we talk about the protracted war, this was August 14th, 1791, that gathering took place. And the fight was carried on until Independence Day, January 1st, 1804.
Right.
And the significant battle that closed the deal was the Battle of Bataille de Vertier, the Battle of Vertier, in November 22nd, 1803.
Right.
That saw the coming together of, because in Haiti at that time, the Africans were fighting, the mulattoes were fighting, while there were some different interests, they were able to converge against the French, which throughout this resistance had really focused their attention, I'm talking about the French, on trying to defeat this struggle. They sent all kinds of forces. Napoleon, who was the most powerful ruler on the European continent, has sent his best soldiers, his best generals, and eventually throughout the struggle was even able to you know, gain some victories, because eventually in the course of this fight, Toussaint, who was much more of a military tactician, strategist, who sought compromises, sought deliberation of his people, but within the system of the French maintaining some stake in the island to continue to benefit from slavery, but some kind of semi-independent situation. They eventually captured Toussaint in the process of this war. They ambushed him and took him to France and killed him. He died in the prison in France in the cold weather. But the process itself begun, the significant period began on August 14, 1791, and carried through to the this period of time in engagement to Toussaint. Eventually, when they had captured Toussaint basically told him, well, you've only cut off the branches of this tree of liberty. The reality is the roots are deeply planted, and they will regrow and lead to the total freedom of the Africans on the island, and which is what happened when Dessalines, who was a lieutenant or general in Toussaint's army, eventually took over after Toussaint's ambush, and had a different strategy. It was not a strategy of compromise. Dessalines basically took a position that it would be, you know, he implemented the slogan, the freedom or death call, and issued forth a call to cut off their heads, cut off the heads of the slave masters, their families and children, and to raise their property. Cut off their heads, burn their homes. And so that was the attitude that brought about the end of that struggle that expelled the French from the island. And so that's the picture of the protracted war that was waged during that time, bro.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to a couple of points, too, and I really appreciate you sort of fleshing out the Congress at Wakaima and also the role of Boukman, because I believe that and by the way, I don't know, I was remiss. I keep, my wife and I often talk about it, and I should have pulled it up. That prayer, oh, man, that is one of, that prayer is so powerful. That Boukman prayed as he, you know, talked about our gods, and the white man's God is an oppressive God, and our God will be on our side. And I believe that that spiritual power, I mean, obviously the military prowess of Toussaint and Dessalines and all that was important, but there were, you know, the Haitians had to suffer heavy casualties. I mean, you know, they didn't have all of the military wherewithal, so it was almost like sometimes just waves of people of sacrificing themselves. But I think that sacrificial commitment was kind of rooted in a spiritual belief, a spiritual power that I think, and this is, I have no way of, I mean, this is just my interpretation, that was very much a part of what happened at that Congress. What's your sense of that?
Well, you know, if you take a look at the context, The spiritual paradigm shift, because we know that the historical conquest of the West over the Native Americans, the Africans, whether they're on the African continent, whether they're in the Western Hemisphere, it was about trying to capture the minds of the Africans and to replace their beliefs, delete what they brought forth with them, and then to infuse them with an absolute obedience to the Western religious philosophies of submission that they sold to the Africans. And so for that kind of paradigm shift to take place, where we have the call for that specifically stated, the God who created the earth, created the sun that gives us light, the God who holds up the ocean, who makes the thunder roll, our God has ears, who has ears to hear, you know, call on us to fight back, to stand up, calling us to reject the images of, you know, the God of those who would rape us, who would enslave us, who would murder us. So, you know, he laid out a call that basically shifted the paradigm, you know, put forth a different way to look at the world.
Right.
And you know, he talks about that God see that the whites have made us suffer. The white man's God asks us to commit crimes. The God within us want us to be good. Our God who is so good and just, he orders us to revenge the wrong.
Right.
It is he who will direct our arms and bring us the victory. It is he who will assist us we all should throw away the images of the white man's God who is so pitiless. Listen to the voices of liberty that sings in our heads. So you have a paradigm shift that, you know, once folks understand the different reality that is calling us, the different appeal to our humanity, it's a powerful kind of drive. It transforms. It talks about, you know, not sacrifice for the sake of the masters, not blind obedience,
right,
but a call for folks to stand up and resist.
Right.
So, well, you're right, that kind of that sacrifice of the sacrifice of our lives ought to be for the interests of our people,
right,
and not to replenish and replenish the pockets and the coffers of the enslavers.
Right. We have to take a little break here, Lionel. We're going to continue this conversation. Our guest online is Lionel Jean-Baptiste, who is giving us a history lesson this morning, but it's a history lesson for a purpose. This is Haitian Independence Day. And frankly, I think this is the greatest revolution the world has ever known, particularly when measured against the criteria of human rights. Never, ever in the history of humankind have enslaved people revolted against their slave masters to create an independent nation. That is what the Africans in Haiti did, and hence, therefore, our examination of it and the significance of it for today, which we'll examine on the other side of this break. We're going to take a break, and we will be right back with Judge Lionel Jean-Baptiste.
Throughout the month of January, New York City's Office of Media and Entertainment presents Jan Arts NYC, the largest music festival in the world. The public can enjoy innovative works hosted around the city. Arts organizations include Chamber Music America, the Public Theater Under the Radar Festival, Prototype, Opera Theater Now, International Society for the Performing Arts, Joyce Theater's American Dance Platform, American Realness, Performance Space 122's Coil Festival, NYC Winter Jazz Fest, Wavelengths, APAP Music World Pre-Conference, APAP NYC 2018, and Global Fest. For more information, janartsnyc.org. That's janartsnyc.org.
The campaign to bring Mumia home invites you to the second premiere episode of Inside the Activist Studio, featuring Ramona Africa and Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz in conversation about white supremacy and her new book, Loaded, A Disarming History of the Second Amendment. Join us Tuesday, January 9th, 6 p.m. at the Graduate Center, 365 Fifth Avenue between 35th and 34th Streets. For further information, write bringmomiahome@gmail.com or call the number 347-709-2264.
Yo, check this out. This is Chuck, the Public Enemy number one, the rebel without a pause, bringing the noise and fighting the power right here to the Sights and Sounds. That's right, Sights, 99.5 WBAI.
Okay, we're back again. This is the professor, and we're having our Imani Day. This is the day of faith, the whole notion, and appropriately so, the whole notion of the righteousness and the confidence in the victory of our struggle, and the victory of the Haitian Revolution is on the table, as well as the Emancipation Proclamation was not a total victory, but it was along the trail of the black freedom struggle, the continuous black freedom struggle, and a relationship between the two, by the way, because many of the enslaved Africans, most notably the revolt that took place near Savannah, they knew very much about the Haitian Revolution. They didn't have internet. There was no social media. But Gabriel Prosser and many of the slave leaders, the leaders of these revolts, were very aware of the revolt that took place in Haiti. Judge Lionel Jean-Baptiste is on with us just for a few more minutes, and I have too many questions, so I got to sharpen them down to just a few before Mark Thompson joins us in about 10 minutes. So, Lionel, one of the things I want to just quickly touch on is because Toussaint and Dessalines and Pétion and they had military training. It was almost like the classic case of learning from the enemy and then turning it on them. In fact, I remember during the bicentenary, the campaign that was led by, and you remember the brother, I don't remember now, but he made a major campaign to make sure that the contributions of Haitians, particularly those troops led by Christophe, was honored in Savannah. So, yeah. Again, it was like, you know, these folks could have decided to stay with the French, but they learned from the French and then turned it on them.
Yeah, the that one of the amazing things that about Toussaint is, you know, he was self-taught. He was able to gain the favors of his master, and he became, one of his foremen. And so in the process of learning, Toussaint was exposed to the whole discourse that was going on around this period of time in 1789 or thereabouts, with the French Revolution and the call for the rights of men, liberty, equality, fraternity. And Toussaint basically, you know, stated, why not us?
Why not us, right?
And so he, with his intelligence, he was incorporated in the French army in the fight against the Spaniards. At different point in time, he joined forces with the Spaniards and learned a lot in the process. And Toussaint, even though relative to Dessalines, he was more of a compromiser, but it's the cumulative experience of Dessalines that say, okay, I can't compromise with the enemy because they've taken our leader, and what they want from us is absolute slavery. So Toussaint came out of a particular experience and was able to implement, provide a lot of contribution to the enemy at different particular point in time and their fight to control the island. The Haiti itself, Toussaint, with the military forces that he was developing that included some enslaved Africans, folks were sent to help gained the independence of the United States. The Battle of Savannah saw a lot of a good number of Haitian soldiers there fighting, including Christophe. Only Christophe, who would eventually become king, one of the main leaders of the nation. Brother who works on establishing the Savannah monument. His name is escaping me right now, too. But there has been a real hue and cry to make sure that everybody understood the history. That's why the demand for the United States to stop behaving in a way that it negates the contribution of Haitians to Western, to the liberation of humanity, to freedom, and to the specific freedom of the United States. He wanted to make sure that that contribution is known.
Right.
But beyond that, really the impact of the Haitian Revolution, as we know, is beyond the liberation of Haiti.
Right.
And it was clear and unequivocal because on the day that the Independence Declaration was to be articulated, there's a brother by the name of Bois Antonin, who was given the task, one of the generals, And he said, you know, to really express the sentiments of the enslaved Africans who have now liberated themselves to articulate the independence, we would need, you know, a sword for the pen, the skull of a white man to hold the to be the inkwell, his blood for the ink, you know, for us to really articulate. So there was a clarity as to who the friends were, who the enemies were. And when they talked about the white man, they excluded basically the Haitian Constitution that came out of that included all human beings who were in favor of the freedom of all people. And they excluded the enslavers, and they characterized, you know, any white man who were against slavery would not be allowed to be a citizen. But there were some Polish soldiers who fought on the side of the Haitian Revolution. Those were accepted as Haitian citizens.
Right. Besides
that Declaration of Independence that freed everyone, men, women, to become citizens of Haiti, it also, the organizers sent support to Simón Bolívar in Latin America to continue to wage his fight for freedom from enslavement and colonialism in Latin America. And basically the condition was, yeah, you could get our support as long as you make sure that there's no slavery.
Right.
Liberate the enslaved Africans. And as you indicated, the call for freedom also permeated the United States. A number of Haitians went to the New Orleans area, fomented insurrection. Denmark VC Gabriel Prosser and a number of others who got wind of this fight back also rose up and gained confidence in the fight for liberation. You connected, before you transitioned to the other guests, you connected the Emancipation Proclamation. And the reality is that the Haitian independence was not recognized by the United States for 58
right.
years.
Right.
It was not until the eve of the Emancipation Proclamation that Haitian independence was finally recognized. So there was some strategic thinking on the part of Lincoln and others, because ultimately they were hoping that these enslaved Africans of North America would leave and go to Haiti.
That's right.
Because it was not about trying to embrace the Emancipation Proclamation. The liberation of the enslaved Africans was as a result of struggle.
That's right.
You know, they fought to liberate themselves. They fought to end slavery. And the concessions were made, but without real provisions for real equality. But the door was open for folks to return to Haiti. And we know that in the interim, an important chapter for us, as those of us who have taken on the fight for reparations and restitution, is that after Haiti had gained its independence in 1804, had won its independence, had defeated Napoleon and the armies of the Spanish and others, not only kicked the French out of the Western the American continent by the fact that France was forced to sell its Louisiana territory to the United States.
Right.
When we hear about the Louisiana Purchase, often
right.
we think that it's just a happenstance, but it was interconnected and interdependent to the happenings in Haiti. And that territory now constitutes 19 states in the United States.
Right.
So it was not a small thing. It was not the state of Louisiana. It was the territory of Louisiana.
Right. Huge expansion.
And on top of that, too, Ron, we know that not only did the United States fail to recognize Haiti for 58 years, it organized an embargo against Haiti to try to choke it out of existence.
Right.
And in the meantime, collaborated with France, because France sought to and did get reparations from, it extracted a ransom from Haiti. Haiti had to pay France. The agreement initially was 150 million francs in gold bullion, which is the equivalent of $22 billion today.
Wow.
And France had an armada of ships threatening a reinvasion and occupation of Haiti in 1825 if Haiti did not pay this ransom. And under President Boyer, that concession was made, that agreement was entered into, and Haiti took until 1947
to pay that
repay that ransom to France. And during the course of the payment of that sum, you know, they borrowed significant amount of money from French banks at usurious kind of interest rate to make those obligations.
Right.
So there was a lot going on at that period of time.
Right.
That, you know, and France, we have to say, France had been extremely dependent on that debt, on the income that was being generated, the wealth that was being generated.
Right.
And so the planters, those who own plantations and stuff, imposed on their government, you know, the necessity to go and try to get them payment for the losses that they suffered.
Right. Well, we've run out of time.
Which is, I think,
like
is
I said
one
before,
of the things that we talk about now with the whole CARICOM reparations movement.
Right.
There's a lot of the enslavers, the British enslavers, sought and got payment.
Yeah.
For the losses that they suffered as a result of the eventual end of slavery.
Right. Well, we run out of time, so we got, as I said before, there were other questions I wanted to raise, including some of these, but my next guest is standing online. Really, really, really appreciate giving us this basic 101, because sometimes we take for granted that people know these things. Certainly there are Haitians listening today who would know that history. There are many African Americans and other people of conscience and goodwill who may not have that history and understand it. So that's why we wanted you to come on today and to give us that information. And you'll be coming back more and more, because I always have Haiti at the center of my advocacy and work. So Judge Lionel Jean-Baptiste, have a productive, meaningful Haitian Independence Day, and we look forward to having many, many more interviews with you down the line.
Thank you, and you have a healthy new year.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, that is Judge. He is a judge. He's an activist who organized and from Evanston, Illinois. That's the city that he's from. And we really wanted to lay a foundation with the Haitian Revolution, but there is a interconnectivity to this process. In fact, Frederick Douglass would become the first ambassador to Haiti. And it's interesting to go back and read what Frederick Douglass said, because he was clear in his head that he did not want the policy of the United States towards Haiti to be what it became. Because not only was there this embargo, by 1915, the United States actually invaded Haiti and put down an insurrection and stayed there until 1934. But once again, Frederick Douglass took a clear position that he did not want Haiti exploited. He was not going to be an ambassador for the capitalist and imperialist interest, because that's who Frederick Douglass was. But clearly he influenced as well by the example of the Haitian Revolution. Well, now we've been joined in terms of connecting this conversation by Mark Thompson, my dear friend, and the host of Make It Plain on SiriusXM Progress 127. So he's just coming off the air, no doubt. He's ready. All right, Mark Thompson, welcome to Make It Plain. I'm getting confused. Welcome to Vantage Point.
Hey, man, good morning. Well, you confused because you were sitting in for me all week. So.
That's what I'm saying, you know.
Well, I do appreciate that. Thank you for hosting on Sirius XM for us. We do appreciate that. Happy New Year and happy last day of Kwanzaa, Imani.
Yeah, right. We were talking about that, Judge Lionel Jean-Baptiste just joining us. I wanted to connect these 2 days, Independence Day as well as Haitian Independence Day as well as Emancipation Day. And I wanted you to start us off by giving us a little background on the history or the origins of the New Year's Eve watch services that some people do, but I'm not sure they even know and remember the significance of it. But give us your sense of the evolution and development of the watch service on New Year's Eve.
Well, the watch night service, and, you know, it's, and again, I thank you, it's important to understand that, you know, during this time of year, we as a people have had our own celebrations and holidays, if you will. And they've always been very, very sacred to us. But the watch night service on December 31st in 1862, our people met in our houses of worship on that New Year's Eve and awaited the end of slavery, which was to go into effect on January 1st, 1863. So this has always been something that we've done, and it's been an opportunity. Obviously, we don't wait for emancipation anymore, but it's been an opportunity to welcome in a new start, a new year, a sense of freedom from what was old in the past year to what is new in the new year. And I know many people look at New Year's Eve that way. Everybody across the world does. But for African Americans, it's not just metaphorical. We were free after that first watch night service the following day, the next year, January 1st, 1863. And so it is a metaphor today when we think about new year, new beginnings, a fresh new start. For us, it has a very, very special and a very, very sacred meaning.
Right. Now, the reason I asked you that, and when I was on your show last week, I was asking people the question about Kwanzaa. Will it sustain itself? Will it last? Or will it just be sort of a generational thing of people who helped create it, you know, out of the brilliance of Marlana Coringa, Dr. Marlana Coringa, in the 60s? Or will it just sort of be, will pass on? And I started my interview with Lionel Jean-Baptiste by asking, on this day, do Haitians do anything? And he said, of course. Mm. And he said that there was a squash soup, I think he said it was, that is obligatory on this day. That you can almost count on everywhere in where they're Haitians today, they're going to partake of that soup. And there's a reason why they partake of that soup in terms of enslavement and whatever. And then there are programs on this day throughout the Haitian community. There are programs going on. There are churches and organizations and who are having. And then at the end of those programs, they also serve food, and that food also is connected back to the historical struggle around the Haitian Revolution. And so I mentioned that because, you know, I just happened to just mention to a couple of people about the Watts service. And, you know, and they had no idea. It was just like there was no sense that this was connected to the Emancipation Proclamation. And as you and I were talking about it, I remember coming up as a young activist in the NAACP coming out of Youngstown, Ohio. In fact, in Youngstown, Ohio, I don't know whether they still do it or not, but the Interdenominational Ministerial Alliance, every January 1st, there was an Emancipation Day program. It was a collective program. People gathered and whatever. So it was a kind of a remembrance kind of thing. And so one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about that is I have I wonder, what is it that even within our churches we'll have these services today, and yet it's not even mentioned, that the people who are having the white service don't even know what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sorry to admit that many churches do not acknowledge it, the original origin. It's kind of something, I don't know, that's taken for granted, that it's assumed that most people know what it's for, and what have you. But I have the same concerns you have about whether or not we are going to sustain these traditions and sustain these services. As a matter of fact, I think that Washington, D.C. right now is the only jurisdiction that has a regular Emancipation Day celebration. Mm. I think the slaves, and I need to look up the exact date of that, because slavery ended in D.C. on a different date other than the 1st, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah, it's the 16th of April.
Right.
So every April 16th, and this was in April 16, 1862. So every April 16th, there's a big celebration in Washington, D.C., and I commend the people who fought to make that as important as it is. But we don't do that as we ought to, quite frankly. This ought to be a more sacred day and a more sacred holiday. And we've got a couple of motivations to do it. I mean, there is Kwanzaa. This is a day where we are to exhibit faith, have reverence for faith. Whatever God, her or him, you pray to, today, the seventh day of Kwanzaa, is a day to acknowledge that faith and how that faith has brought us. In Kwanzaa, we also say faith in one another, faith in our people, faith in our ancestry. So this is a day when we should not only acknowledge Kwanzaa, but we also should acknowledge Emancipation Day. So we really got two holidays that on today that we can't afford to overlook, Ron.
Yeah, and I'm wondering maybe if, you know, some of us get nostalgic, and I'll say, yeah, maybe I get nostalgic, but I don't think so, because I've always seen a function for holidays, not just for the sake of them. And I guess that's kind of where I'm going with it, is maybe placing too much emphasis on it. Or is it the situation that, given who we are as Africans in America and the way in which we have, and I go back and sometimes recite the notion that what Malcolm X said, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock, Plymouth Rock landed on us. And Malcolm also saying, of all the crimes committed against Africans by Europeans, the greatest was to take our name, and that was really to crush culture. So it's in that spirit, really, that I worry that sometimes we don't push culture enough, not just for the sake of pushing it, but because young people can learn from it, and you can build on it, and you can develop it in a way that is, I think, maybe life-saving. But it's almost as if sometimes we kind of want to get away from that black stuff and this cultural stuff, and it's kind of out there, but don't emphasize it too much, you know. And it worries me, because I think culture in a revolutionary sense, we were just talking about the impact of Buchmann and Matsumela. If you have not read the prayer that Buchmann prayed on the night of Wakaima when they convened that Congress in August 14, 1791, you should Google it, man. It is a powerful prayer. And as we were having this conversation with Lionel Jean-Baptiste, I said, I believe that is what girded these African revolutionaries to sacrifice. Because some of the images, man, they're like throwing their lives. I mean, they're being cut down by, you know, the artillery and so forth. But they just keep coming because they are imbued with something that these French didn't understand. And that was the power and the spirit of the God that they believed in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, look, I got to take a break here. But on the other side, I want to talk more about that, your sense of that. I want to talk even about the Negro spirituals. Why don't we don't deal with those things, the legacy of them more in terms of what they tell us. Then I also want to get your projections on where we think Black America is in the coming 2018. But we have to take a break here. You're listening to Vantage Point here, 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network. Our guest online is Mark Thompson. He's the host of Make It Plain on Sirius XM Progress 127. We'll be right back with him after we take this break.
The campaign to bring Mumia home invites you to the second premiere episode of Inside the Activist Studio, featuring Ramona Africa and Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz in conversation about white supremacy and her new book, Loaded, A Disarming History of the Second Amendment. Join us Tuesday.
Throughout the month of January, New York City's Office of Media and Entertainment presents Jan Arts NYC, the largest music festival in the world. The public can enjoy innovative works hosted around the city. Arts organizations include Chamber Music America, the Public Theater Under the Radar Festival, Prototype, Opera Theater Now, International Society for the Performing Arts, Joyce Theater's American Dance Platform, American Realness, Performance Space 122's Coil Festival, NYC Winter Jazz Fest, Wavelengths, APAP Music World Pre-Conference, APAP NYC 2018, and Global Fest. For more information, janartsnyc.org. That's janartsnyc.org.
Hi, this is Jake Sufnarowski, former talent buyer at Wetlands Preserve. When I'm not driving my gas-guzzling SUV, texting my friends in my handheld mobile device, or listening to my local Clear Channel affiliate, I'm definitely tuned to WBAI, listener-supported non-commercial radio in New York City, 99.5 FM.
Mark Thompson is kindly consented to join us today after hosting his program this morning from 6 a.m. MIP is at 6 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. on Sirius XM Progress 127. And he's connected to the whole world. He had folks calling from all over the place up in there. And, of course, has been doing it for many, many, many years. Be kind enough to join us today on Imani, the Day of Faith, which also talked about belief in ourselves, our leaders, our people, and the righteousness and victory of our struggle. Hence, really, the importance of both Haitian Independence Day as well as Emancipation Day we've been talking about. And we were really talking about this in terms of the sort of absence of commemorations and celebrations. We have them. I'm not saying we don't have many. That's certainly the case. Juneteenth, by the way, seems to have more traction than sort of Emancipation Day now. There is kind of something out there that people kind of remember about Juneteenth Day. But Mark, I was contending that it seems to me we should be ramping it up. We should be emphasizing these things really more than anything else for, like, young people, you know. And I feel the same way about the Negro spirituals, you know. These Negro spirituals tell a story about our true faith, yes, but they talk about survival and our ingenuity of how we could be up in the white man's face and talk two languages. And it just seems to me that if we were focusing on that, I don't even hear the Negro spirituals in our services hardly anymore.
Yeah, I would agree. just like, you know, we're here in New York, one of my favorite places to go is Jazz and Lincoln Center. And many a night I'll go to a event and be the only African-American in the room. So we have to find ways to have preservation and reverence for our own culture. In a very interesting way, our culture and contribution to history is so vast. It is a lot to take in. If we focus solely on our contributions to history on these shores, it would consume our daily lives enough. We wouldn't even have to focus on American history in the context of white people. So I think that's part of the struggle that we remain in. As Du Bois said, these two irreconcilable strivings, living here in America, yet being from somewhere else, and having two really very, very different histories. And our history is a resistance history to white America. And if I could just kind of tie it all together, you were talking about Buchmann, and I'm familiar with the prayer. The Christians in the French and the Christians in Haiti, the white Christians, demonized the Haitian faith. And voodoo was the word they came up with. And they accused the Haitians of being Satan worshipers. Well, in America, as African Americans, we weren't accused of being Satan worshipers, but we were taught and indoctrinated with a very, very different form of Christianity. So that when white churches, the few that do, who have watch night services, they don't have them for the same reason. It's not the same faith. And this ties together with that term Imani. What is our faith? Our belief in God or our faith references us. It references people who look like us. And those who believe in God references a God that looks like us, or even a Savior that looks like us. And so I know where you're going with this, Dr. Daniels. It is so important. And I really call upon, you know, my millennial sisters and brothers. I usually like to pretend I'm still a millennial, but for the sake of this conversation, I won't do that right now. but, you know, I would challenge our millennial sisters and brothers to take up the mantle of having reverence for our culture and infusing it and injecting it into our struggle. Not that they don't, but it has to be on a much stronger and a much more consistent levels, so we don't lose, so we don't forget who we are. I was just at a Jazz Lincoln Center for my birthday, and ran into Wynton Marsalis, and I thanked him for almost single-handedly keeping the culture alive. It's interesting, if you go to Japan or China, jazz is some of the most popular music there. Right. Music that we created, be one of the true indigenous art forms, spirituals. One of the true indigenous art forms. And the other reason these songs, especially the spirituals and this culture, is sacred, Dr. Daniels, is because we all know we're in a struggle today, obviously, Black Lives Matter and what have you. But embedded within those spirituals were coded language.
That's right.
That led to freedom, led to the Underground Railroad. They weren't just random songs. They weren't just moans and chants. There were there was language. Follow the drinking gourd was the path upon which people went when taking the Underground Railroad, and the drinking gourd is what led to the North Star. So we ought to have more appreciation and reverence. And again, it goes back to, you know, Dr. Adelaide Sanford. One of the surviving members of the Board of Education of People of African Ancestry, founded by Dr. John Henry Clark and Charchi McIntyre over 20 years ago. When we fought for African-centered education, in our schools. It was for the very reasons we're talking about now, so that we would know more about our history and culture, so this next generation coming along would know, so that we would have more appreciation for it. And we must have that if we're going to continue to survive and continue to have victory.
Really, really agree on that. And I keep, you know, probing for ways that we can get that done. And because, as one of the things that Dr. Karinga said, and I was sharing this when I was, you know, guest hosting for you, that continues to resonate. And he said that the key crisis in black life is the cultural crisis. That was one of the foundational things that he talked about when he put forth Kwanzaa as the as an African-American holiday and the values and principles that are encapsulated in it. He said, if we cannot believe in ourselves, if we cannot, you know, again, essentially believe in ourselves as a people, he said, then we will never really ultimately win. Now, obviously, we're winning. We're incrementally, we're not where we were, and we're taking steps forward. But it would just seem that if we had this cultural foundation, again, not just as a thing that is isolated. In fact, Karinga talks about art as being functional, collective, and committed. It's not just art for art's sake. It's not just culture for culture's sake. It is functional, collective, and committed. Those three terms, you know, about how to help move us forward. And I think we need to find more and more ways of dealing with it. I was doing something. Oh, I guess there's a class I'm getting ready to teach next semester at York College, and brother who was doing some of the design, and I was mentioning some of the names of people that we'll be covering, whether it's David Walker or Bishop Henry McNeil Turner and whatever. And he was saying, wow, he said, why don't I know about these people? You know what I mean? Why don't I know about this? He said, it would be good. So he's a very interesting brother. So he's thinking about finding ways that we can start doing maybe a series on the IBW website about that. I know Barbara Arnwine seems to do that. I know during certain periods she will uplift individual contributors, people who may not be that well known, women and men, just to sort of uplift that so we connect with that history. Because it is really amazing when you really think about it, what black people have done from the period of enslavement and building institutions. And I mean, this is an amazing history about the resilience and strength and of a people that I just believe that if our young people were taught this, if they had this in their embedded in their consciousness early on, it would just fortify us as a people in a way that, you know, we're there, but we're not sufficiently there is what I'm sort of driving at.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And to link it back to Haiti, you know, part of that history is important too, because after the Haitian Revolution, there was a fear that it would spark a very similar revolution here in the United States. And so, you know, when we use a cliche, it's a small world, it truly is. Much of what we have experienced, what the Haitians experience, is linked together. They're not, these cultures are not that far apart from each other. We are all still an African people. It just depends where we got off the boat.
Right.
You mentioned the culture. Obviously, New Year's Eve is Karumba, the sixth day of Kwanzaa. And that's why when people really, really think about it, and I wish they would think about it this way, they haven't. When we look at culture and art, be it music, be it visual art, what have you, most of our artists who are African-American or who are Haitian have always used art to express some form of resistance and some form of revolution. Why? Because creativity takes us to a higher order. And so it's difficult to be a creative person, to create and to create art, without going into oneself and finding oneself on a higher plane. It's rarely just random. I'm just beating these drumsticks.
Right.
Well, where did the drum come from? I'm just playing the banjo. Where'd the banjo come from? Where did even these very instruments come from that we play? And so if we would even encourage, and that's one other thing too, that's just on the arts, Dr. Daniels. But we must also remember that we are not simply the descendants of the Haitian slaves who revolted or the American slaves who were in that first watch night service. Because before slavery, we were from one of the greatest civilizations, if not the greatest civilization, the first civilization in antiquity.
Right.
We were the first doctors, lawyers, and scientists. As I've always contended that, and we talk today about STEM, STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and our young people being prepared for skills in those areas, because that's the wave of the future. You know, Dr. Daniels, if you and I were coming along today, they would say, Ron and Mark, you all need to go into STEM. But the fact of the matter is, our young people don't even realize, as young African people, our historical role in STEM, coming from the first civilization, the first scientists, the first technologists and engineers and mathematicians in ancient Egypt. It is in our DNA to do STEM, to understand STEM, and to excel in STEM. But if you are led to believe that you just can't do it, that your people lag behind and that there just is nothing there for you, you don't know that. And so knowing our history and culture, I think, would play an incredible role in inspiring our young people, keeping them focused and leading even to their academic success as adolescents.
Well, we just got about five more minutes left, so I also have to pick your brain because you're dealing with these issues every day, you know, on your show, and we frequently see you on various shows on MSNBC and CNN and whatever, you know, as a commentator, sort of sharing your perspective on what's happening. We are certainly at a unique period in history, to put it mildly. That's a huge understatement. And we're into 2018, and there are major challenges potentially ahead, but also major opportunities. So I'm just wondering whether you just share with us your sense of where Black America in particular is moving or should be moving in this 2018.
Well, I think Alabama gave us a preview. I think that once and for all, we're waking up to our electoral political power. African-Americans vanquish Roy Moore at the ballot box, particularly African-American women. And I think it's important to understand the reason for that and our role in that as well. Whites many times still vote on the basis of race, more so than we do. I mean, we will vote for white candidates, as you and I know. We have always done that. We did that in this very situation in Alabama. Why? Because we saw just what a terrible candidate that Roy Moore was. And I think it was also offensive to many African Americans. As logical as it was, when we saw his history, just what a bad individual, bad human being he is, the whites still wanted to vote for him simply because he was white, representing a party, and represented a party that is utterly against African-Americans, Ron. And that was pretty transparent. I think that mobilized us, and I think we had to wake up to the reality that that's going to continue to happen as long as Donald Trump is in the White House. And as long as that's the case, we have to do what's in our best interest, what ultimately ends up being in the best interest of America. Countries around the world, citizens, people around the world, looking at us, like, how can you elect someone who's a hebephile to Congress? So that's one thing. We know our power at the ballot box. I think we can, with our help, the Democrats can win back the House and Senate. And just a word on that, the Democratic Party must do a better job of not taking us for granted as African Americans, especially Black women. And we must recognize our power within the party and take it over. If we don't have the will or the ability to form a third party at the moment or to form a Black political party, we do have the power, if we choose to exercise it, to take over the Democratic Party. And for those within our own party who use the term identity politics and have a disdain for it, that's a right-wing term. And anybody who uses it ought to be shut down from using it. But that's electoral politics. In terms of our grassroots politics, it must be linked to what you and I are talking about today, our history and our culture and a reverence for it. There is nothing, there is no issue going on in this country that does not affect us and affect us in an extraordinary way as African Americans. Someone we both know and love, who used to be a resident of Selma, Tarana Burke, pushed the button to lower the ball in Times Square on last night, Dr. Daniel. Tarana's now back home in her original home in New York. She's the founder of the Me Too movement. And when people started hashtagging Me Too again, there were those who didn't know that a black woman actually started that movement and started that hashtag. And so now she's finally getting the recognition she deserves. But let me say something, though, sisters and brothers, and men, too. All of us as African Americans, as African people, are part of this Me Too movement and are victims of it. We look the way we look because our ancestors were sexually assaulted, raped on these plantations. Men and women on the auction block were sexually assaulted because you had to be examined before you were sold. And so that, too, is a part of our history. Like I said, there's nothing going on that has not explicitly affected us as well. So some of us look at this, well, Me Too, it's about white women, it's about Hollywood. No, it's not. It's about the history of sexual violence that came here to America with the settler colonialists. They did it to the Native Americans as well. And so the sooner we understand our history and the sooner we understand that survival unfortunately requires a commitment to resistance, the sooner we get that, we'll get it. And lastly, I'll just say my new slogan going into 2018, let's escort Trump off the scene in 2018.
All right. Let's escort Trump off the scene in 2018. All right. That's a
alternatively, impeachment for collusion is my 2018 resolution.
All right. The Reverend Mark Thompson. Look, appreciate so much you spending time with us this morning and helping to enlighten our audience. And of course, we'll obviously be working together down the road a piece. So we look forward to a productive, prosperous, and resistance and transformative 2018. And we're going to move ahead.
Happy Imani and Happy New Year, Ron. Thank you for everything.
All right. Really appreciate it. All right. That was Mark Thompson, who, again, can be heard on Sirius XM Progress 127, 6 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. every Monday through Friday. And I had the privilege of guest hosting for him the 26th through the 29th, connecting with his audience throughout the country. Well, the best balance of our time, we're going to hear from our listening audience today. We have time open. I always try to keep some space open. And you can call us at 347-335-0818. Let me say that again. 347-335-0818. And what we'd like you to do is sort of talk about the importance of commemorating the Haitian Independence Day or Emancipation Day, for that matter. As we've been discussing for most of this program, I wanted to connect these two commemorations, if you will, and the significance of them, and they are interrelated. But also your forecast. Reverend Mark Thompson concluded with his forecast of what he thought was important for black people moving forward in 2018, but you know, you don't have to be black to call. You can be Latino, Asian, Native American, Euro-ethnic, as Reverend Herbert Daughtry puts it, or white, for that matter, to just talk about your perspective on where we should be moving, where we are, what's the goal, what's the resolution for 2018. So again, you know, we've had this conversation unfolding about the importance of Haitian Independence Day. And to my Haitian brothers and sisters, we know that you're out there, you're having your soup, and many of you are out ready to go to your programs during the course of the afternoon. I've had the privilege of going to some of them during the course of the last 15, 20 years. But you can call us, too, and just share your perspective, 347-335-0818. And of course, in general, also the value of Emancipation Day, the watch night services that, you know, a lot of people weren't even aware of the watch night services, the Negro spirituals, what they mean and what value they might have to our young people. They just knew that it's not just their songs that connect us to our spirituality, songs that connect us to our people and our history, but also coded. This is the brilliance, the ingenuity of it. It is the kuumba of it, the idea that, in fact, we could be, you know, singing a song, and yet we could be, you know, in a situation where we're also leading a rebellion or sending coded words. So others can call us. People can call us at 347-335-0818. Let's go to our first caller. Good morning. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, I just wanted to say I am celebrating with you Haitian Independence Day. I learned about it from Robert Knight many years ago when he did his midnight show. And I wanted to say the Reverend Thompson was just splendid. I had never heard him before because I do not have a TV. But in any case, he was just splendid. What I really liked is that talking about the takeover of the Democratic Party. I like that. For a resolution to begin, and already the black women and the blacks in Alabama showed us the way that it could be done. I have had a lovely friend, Kathleen Nelson, who was in the NAACP, working here about 21 years ago when I met her, and just sang happy birthday to her yesterday, by the way. And I want to celebrate, too, faith in ourselves, Kwanzaa Day. I've celebrated every day of Kwanzaa, and I'm quite happy with the idea that we, you know, the unity, which was the first day of Kwanzaa, unity all the way through, and for our community. And so we need someone. Someone who will, fight back, just like the other man that when you were talking about the boatman's prayer. We need, and that night was a lovely guest too. I don't know if that was Reverend Thompson or not.
No, that was Judge Lionel Jean Baptiste.
Judge. Yes, he was. He, you know, talking about fighting back, standing up and resisting. We, the blacks have led in the civil rights, helped white women, women of every color, and you in the rainbow. And I have faith in the black movement as well. And I hope that you guys can do what the whites have obviously not been able to do, the progressives, the people who want economic, political, social, and emotional justice. We have not been able to do so. I'm there ready to join with you.
Okay.
I do think that the thing to do is to do like Bernie Sanders' example was for us, to not to go into a third-party movement. I mean, we had that lovely man and his wife, Charles Barron. They tried that with the Freedom Party. And, they got all these signatures, but no votes. And not enough votes for the governor, unfortunately.
Right. Okay. So, well, there are different options out there. So we appreciate...
Fighting within the party is the Democratic Party. Fight for that, just like the black women did, and my friend from the NAACP, she called her friends, she lives in Florida, she called her friends in Alabama, and the NAACP went knocking on doors, and I'm going to try to organize too, but
gotcha.
What can we do? We have to unify eventually.
Okay. Well, look, thank you so much. Really appreciate your call, and you have a wonderful new year. All right, others can call at, again, 347-335-0818. Others can call, again, 347-335-0818. Actually, we're going to take a quick pause here, take a quick break, and come back, and we'll be taking the phone calls down the stretch. But the number to call, again, is 347-335-0818. We're going to take a quick pause and be right back to answer your calls here on Vantage Point.
The current administration in Washington has done so many horrible things to the air, water, wildlife, land use, energy use, and environmental justice that it will take two episodes of Ecologic to cover it. Tune in on Tuesday, January 2nd and 16th at 8 p.m. to hear environmental experts and activists discuss what the administration has done and what we can do about it, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
Greetings, this is Savion Glover, and you're listening to WBAI in New York. Enjoy.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to continue to take calls from our listening audience. Again, the number is 347-335-0818. Good morning. You're on Vantage Point.
Good morning. I want to say happy independence and Emancipation Day to everybody. And I wanted to thank you for such a great program. I think it's really needed. I think what's needed for our people as a whole is to look back and remember the achievements that we had, and also just our history in general, so we could see how we were able to overcome obstacles at that point in time and apply it to ourselves today. I think we also need to focus more on business amongst ourselves and using business to fuel our collective goals of furthering our people. That's basically it.
Okay, well, those are certainly valid points. And when you speak about the Kwanzaa, obviously Ujima, collective working responsibility, as right. well as Ujamaa, speak to those principles, if you will, but also the broader cultural framework. And that's why I'm so keen on pushing this, is that that we as Black people embed ourselves, bathe, you know, right. in our culture, not just for the sake of doing it. When you start talking about businesses, if you look back and understand what Richard Allen and Absalom Jones did in beginning to create mutual aid societies, and how those mutual aid societies helped to develop the Black insurance companies and the Black banks, mm-hmm. and that we had Black banks, and you know what happened in terms of Black Wall Street and Haiti, and you know that just knowing that history, you know, that we can right. do this, that we have the capacity to build businesses, and that people have tried to destroy them. But that's why we have to be united collectively to be able to fight back, you know. And I just think a Absolutely. Lot of that is just not, you know, it's just sort of floating around out there, but it's not like something that's embedded in our DNA to the point that we just know that we have to do this. It's, you don't even have to think about it, you know what I mean? We are right. going to do this
and support each other
positively. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Really appreciate your call. Others can call at 347-335-0818, 347-335-0818. Again, we focus today on Haitian Independence Day. This is the day in 1804 that Jean-Jacques Dessalines declared Haiti the first Black republic, standing in Gonaïves, which is really one of the hotbeds of resistance in Haiti throughout its history. But not only that, declared that any enslaved person anywhere in the world that set foot on Haitian soil would be free, and went on further to dispatch troops and materials to Simon Bolivar to liberate South America as well. And so the Haitian Revolution, one of the greatest revolutions in all of humankind, but also the resistance, you know, that led to the Emancipation Proclamation. Of course, it didn't free everybody, and there were reasons why that happened. But on that watch night, January 31st, 1862, in slave quarters, but equally important in throughout the North, in these quasi free communities, Black people in their worship services waiting and watching for January, for the new day to dawn, because it meant that a new stride towards freedom would have been taken taken place. Good morning. You're on Vantage Point.
Good morning, this is Daniels. How are you today?
I'm doing fine.
I appreciate your effortless effort to bring forth a realization that we have power. God has created us that way. We are the leader in this country for everything that exists here.
Hello?
We know that we can...
You're kind of fading away. Are you...
Pardon?
You're kind of fading away. Would you speak up a little bit, please?
Yes. We're on that...
you hearing me?
Yeah, but are you on a speakerphone or something? You're not very clear.
No. I am in maybe the area where I am.
Okay, well, speak straight to us and make your point, please, so we can get other callers in.
All right. The communication, is that coming through?
Yeah, I hear you now. I hear you fine now. So just make your point. Come on. Speak
okay,
to us.
Okay, thank you. Now, the election... City Council election in New York City here with the Basel. The Speaker of the House, the Speaker of the City Council. We should all stand behind Inez Barron to see that she's being elected as Speaker of that chamber. We should not ever anyone else, because it's our turn, and we have to demand it, and we have to take it. Mm. What is happening in Puerto Rico is a shame, and it is that the Puerto Rican people, as I heard this commentator says, Puerto Rican and black Puerto Rican, there's no two Puerto Rican and black people, and until they accepted that they are, they will be struggle and continue struggling until they find their true identity.
Right.
And that is what's happening now with Puerto Ricans. They do not know their true identity. That is
well, I'm not entirely sure that's true. I'm sure some do, but there is no question that throughout Latin America, Central South America, There are Afro descendants, significant populations of Afro descendants, which we have talked about here on this show, and there are some who are in these countries who do not recognize their Africanness and their African heritage. That's true, and we certainly hope that Puerto Rico, as well as the Virgin Islands and all of those islands, will get the necessary assistance that they need. And of course, unity is important in terms of, you know, having a African-American speaker, a black speaker of the city council. The problem is there's more than one candidate. There's several candidates, and our inability to come together to unite behind one has in part been the problem. Look, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Others can call us again at 347-335-0818. Essentially, we're talking about Haitian Independence Day, which is today, as well as Emancipation Day. This is the day that the Emancipation Proclamation took effect on January 1st in 1863. Of course, it did not free all of the Africans at that time, and some never heard about it until well into June. In fact, June 19th, or Juneteenth, in places like Texas that year. But nonetheless, it was a point of great hope for Africans in America at that point. And we talked about the interrelationship between these two, because Denmark Vesey, among others, and his revolt was on his way to Haiti because he knew of the glorious Haitian Revolution, and it shattered the myth of white supremacy and demonstrated that black people could be self-governing. Let's go back to our listening audience. Good morning. You're on Vantage Point.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Number of problems, they're very easy to fix if you got the will, but you can't have the will if you ain't got the faith. So-called black man, he accepts in large part what was forced on him in slavery. That's a very deadly effect. Number two, he thinks that he could coexist with white folks, his natural-born enemy, in the same environment. Never. But he was a free and independent people. They knew who the white folks was. They were totally separate. In his own structured state of total and complete separation, he'll be able to jewel like he is a jewel. It'll never happen with thinking he could coexist with white folks. It'll never happen. It never happened in the beginning. When they were separate, when the separation was complete between them, that's when he accomplished what he accomplished. He can never, ever, ever accomplish anything in United States Satanic Aggression thinking you're a citizen, because you're not a citizen. Mm. A citizen can accomplish plenty because the wound is open for him. The hymen is broken when you're a citizen. We're not citizens. We're captives, and we don't want to accept that fact. When we accept that fact, we'll be in a much better situation. Confucius says something very, very simple and very, very correct. He said, to get success, you must call things by their proper name. We're captives. We're captives. Mm-hmm. Nothing else, nothing other. Kidnapped, brought here, and still here, captives. United States Constitution. I don't know why the preachers don't get up there and put that in the Bible. That ought to be in the Bible. The only citizens of United States Satanic Aggression are white male and female. That's pretty much it. Happy New Year, everybody.
All right. Okay. Free to express your opinion. Others can call at 347-335-0818. A quite pessimistic view, frankly, but pessimism is also allowed here on Vantage Point on these airways. There's free space in order for people to articulate their views. No question that culture is important, but I think that black people have accomplished a lot since being here. It doesn't mean that we necessarily have to stay here, but the notion that somehow there's paralysis in our inability to achieve all of the inventions, all of the contributions that we have made, you know, are sort of indicators of our ability to be resilient and to create, even in hostile environments. We do have that capacity. Let's go back to our listening audience. Good morning. You're on Vantage Point. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Happy
New
Year.
Am I on?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Yes. Good morning. Brother Ron. Hello.
Yes. Just speak right to us.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air, sir.
Yes. I just want to say Happy New Year, and thank you for the work you've been doing. For over 20 years, I've been listening from WRL, and you've done great work, my brother.
Thank you.
You know,
really appreciate
I tend to agree with the last caller. You know, I'm saying that the fight we're putting up with these people, they're trying to take over the Democratic Party. To me, it's a vain issue, because we've done all of this before, and we've reversed everything that we've gained. They turn around and reverse it. Why reverse it? Why do we not create for our own, like the Nation of Islam is doing? That's you know my soap. I've spent my whole life demonstrating, doing all of this, doing that, thinking white people are going to do for us what we should be doing for ourselves, or change their ways. They're going to, ever since we've came in contact with these people, they've been what they are. They're going to do what they want to do. So what we have to do is what we want to do. The classic example is the Nation of Islam. And my whole support is behind the Nation of Islam. I'm not saying I will not support any other organization, because I do. But my heart and my mind is only behind the Nation is Islam. And I'm not an official member, but financially, yeah.
Right.
And morally, yeah. I'm with them every step of the way.
Right.
I thank you, my brother. Peace.
Okay. All right. Others can express themselves. 347-335-0818. 347-335-0818. By the way, just want to also say to folks that we really do appreciate the support of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. That is the base from which I operate, the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. And it's important to say that we really do appreciate the support, the expressions that we're getting. People are now listening to Vantage Point all across the country. because every time we get ready to do a show, we send it out through social media and so forth all across the country, and many people are now listening on WBAI.org, so we really appreciate that. And as a result, you know, people are also contributing and supporting, and we appreciate that so much, and it is urgently, desperately needed in order to continue this work. So the website is IBW21.org. Our website is IBW21.org. It is an amazing resource. It is an incredible resource. Don Rojas, who is our Director of Communications, is a former general manager at WBAI, also general manager for Free Speech Television, and a former editor of Amsterdam News. He's incredibly capable, able, and just recently helped to launch University of West Indies Television. So he's the person who is behind our website. And you have, on the issue of reparations alone, you could spend hours on the IBW website, you know, perusing and learning. And we have all kinds of perspectives and opinions and articles and essays that are on the IBW website. So we urge you to go there as well, IBW21.org. Let's go to our next listener. Good morning. You're on Vantage Point.
Professor Daniels, good morning, sir. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing fine.
Okay, brother. Peace and blessings.
Same to you.
The earlier caller, I'll just let the brother know that my parents are from the so-called island of Puerto Rico, which Puerto Rico means rich port. I am not a rich port, and a lot of us know that our history is indigenous history that's tied to the motherland. So we are, you know, we are from Africa or Kubu land. So first of all, I just want to say that. Secondly, Ray, I'm so happy that you had the gentleman on this morning to let us know about the Haitian Revolution, because as this system celebrates New Year's, we know that God starts a new year in the spring, which brings forth life. So now maybe we can be conscious and put more emphasis on the Haitian Revolution and more emphasis on the so-called freedom that the white people supposedly gave us. And I'm from the understanding also that we were here before Columbus came. So in other words, very little of us were here from enslaved ships. We are the original indigenous people of the earth. But what happens is that when we don't understand knowledge, we're removed from our earthright birthplace. So we have no connection with the earth. So we become weakened. And I think at this time here, instead of celebrating and teaching our children about Santa Claus and the rest of these pagan holidays, we should teach them that we are the knowledge and we are the substance in the world. We the ones, like the earlier caller or your guest said earlier, we gave math and science to the world. And a lot of the Masonic or the so-called Illuminati, they understand that. This is why they give us religion, whether it be Islam, whether it be Christians, whether it be Buddha. They take us away from who we are, that the foundation of God, going back from ancient Kemet or Egypt or Uganda. See, we are the ones that gave the light to the world, but we are not allowed to know this, because if we did, then we know that we'll call upon God, and God will come here in a minute to rescue us. But as long as we call on someone that doesn't look like us, then we take on the spirituality of our oppressors, and that keeps us down. So I think that this year, as we go forward, that we should search for the history of who we are, because the whole world wants to be like us. And you look at the ladies, right? Do you know that they want to have a butt like you? They want to have the lips like you? They want to have the hair like you and everything else? So we don't, for a lot of people that was like, well, let's do this or let's leave. This is our nation, okay? We are from all over the world. Every place on earth, we were there first. So instead of leaving, I think that we should just call upon God and look at history to see who was our mothers and fathers worshiping before they gave us Jesus, before they gave us Muhammad, before they gave us Buddha. So I just feel that we have a tremendous opportunity, but we have to unite with the spirituality of God, and as a reflection and a vibration that we can call upon the spirit of each other, just like they did in the Haitian Revolution when they said the prayer and God rescue us.
Right.
And God continues to want to rescue us, but we just give our focus, you know, as an allegory. Whoever we give our energy to, we make that come alive.
Right. Okay, my brother. Really, really appreciate your calling in today. Thank you very much. Let me just also, before I forget, I almost did, that on January 15th, I just want to announce that the East Elmhurst and Corona Clergy Association will be having its annual Martin Luther King Day scholarship program at St. Mark AME Church, where I am a member, proud member, St. Mark AME Church, 9518 Northern Boulevard in Jackson Heights. And I'll be the keynote speaker. So those of you who are in the neighborhood, or even if you're not in the neighborhood, come out, and I'll be delivering the sermon, or delivering the message, or the keynote presentation on January 15th, the actual birthday of Martin Luther King, for the clergy, the Corona East Elmhurst Clergy Association's annual Martin Luther King Day program. And it is the benefit. The beneficiaries are scholars, young scholars, who will be given scholarships as a result of that program. Again, that is January 15th at St. Mark AME Church, 9518 Northern Boulevard in Jackson Heights. And if you need further information, you can call 718-899-3306. That's 718-899-3306, and they'll tell you how to get to St. Mark AME Church. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning. You're on Vantage Point.
Good morning, Ron Daniels. Thank
good
you
morning.
For the program.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that a lot of times, well, most of the times I cringe, same thing a lot most. I cringe when I hear the first Black Republic, because I'm wondering, this is after or during colonial interaction. We had Black Republics before 500 years. So I think sometimes we have to make sure we understand that they were Black. That's a short period of time during history. And I also wanted to say that in terms of institutions, sometimes we see the police department and we see the violence, and it catches our attention, and we forget that it's a part of a system. So we have the educational system, we have the health system, we have all these systems that are just as violent, but it doesn't get our attention. And maybe they're even more violent. And if we can look holistically and see that when Tamir Rice is shot like that, that we're getting shot like that in every other part of the system.
Right.
And in terms of creating institutions, health, I think, is so important. And when we look at the fact that officially the third leading cause of death in America is direct interaction with the medical systems, with doctors, that's actually the third leading cause of death officially. Now, I think when we look at the math, if that's for America, then naturally, if we begin to look at different segments of America, poor and Black people, people of color, then we would have to say that if it's overall the third leading cause of death in America, then it seems like it would be the first, logically, the first leading cause of death in Black and poor communities. And I think we have to take these things extremely seriously to understand, when we put ourselves in those particular arenas, what the actual numbers are.
Right. Well, look, I'm about out of time, so I really appreciate you providing the information for us. It would be subject for a much longer conversation, but certainly appreciate you sharing your perspective with us. And you have a great new year in this year. Thanks much. Really appreciate it. Okay, well, we're about out of time. Just want to comment that, again, re-emphasize, because sometimes people like to come out and, you know, and to share, that I will be speaking at St. Mark AME Church on January 15th. That's Martin Luther King Day. And St. Mark AME Church is at 9518 Northern Boulevard, Jackson Heights. The phone number there, 718-899-3306, 718-899-3306. In order to get information about that, we'll be talking about that more next week as well. But also just want to thank everybody who has supported WBAI during the course of 2017 and for all of the programs, but also by way of Vantage Point. I really, really appreciate you stepping up and providing support and also supporting the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, because I do this show not because I just want to be a radio talk show host. It's because I want to engage in action. I want to engage in the possibility of changing our community, changing the country, and changing the world. And this is a perch from which some incremental, modest contribution can be made. And we're delighted that because I'm with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, every show we shoot the promos out all over the country and all over the world, for that matter, so people can tune in to WBAI. So this is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels. I'm glad to host Vantage Point. And we'll be back again with you here on WBAI 99.5 FM, the Pacifica Network, next week.
Campaign to Bring Mumia Home invites you to the second premiere episode of Inside the Activist Studio, featuring Ramona Africa and Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz in conversation about white supremacy and her new book, Loaded, A Disarming History of the Second Amendment. Join us Tuesday, January 9th, 6 p.m. at the Graduate Center, 365 Fifth Avenue between 35th and 34th Streets. For further information, write bringmumiahome@gmail.com or call the number 347-709-2264.
Throughout the month of January, New York City's Office of Media and Entertainment presents Jan Arts NYC, the largest music festival in the world. The public can enjoy innovative works hosted around the city. Arts organizations include Chamber Music America, the Public Theater Under the Radar Festival, Prototype, Opera Theater Now, International Society for the Performing Arts, Joyce Theater's American Dance Platform, American Realness, Performance Space 122's Coil Festival, NYC Winter Jazz Fest, Wavelengths, APAP Music World Pre-Conference, APAP NYC 2018, and Global Fest. For more information, janartsnyc.org. That's janartsnyc.org.
Yo, this is Michael Franti from Spearhead, and you're listening to non-commercial radio in New York. WBAI is a place to turn to.
Peace. Oh, my God. Yeah, my mother got a sleeping suicide singing, oh, my God. My mother got us living genocide singing, oh my God. And my mother got us living suicide singing, oh my God, oh my God.
of sunlight to moonlight, reflections of my life. Oh, how they fill my eyes.
The greetings of people in trouble, reflections of my life.
Oh, how they fill my eyes.